You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Welcome to this pork-focused episode of the AHDB podcast. I'm Miriam Druitt, and today we're going to be looking at heat stress in pigs, from what this actually means to how it can affect pigs and what you can do to minimise the impact. With the ongoing remote working, we'll do the best we can with sound quality, but apologies in advance for any interference you might notice. On the line, we have Lauren Dimmock, Animal Health and Welfare Scientist, and Andrew Palmer, Knowledge Exchange Manager for the East of England. And as usual, we'll also have a quick update on the pig market. This month from Felicity Rusk, one of our analysts, who'll be considering how coronavirus might affect pork markets over coming months. But first, let's hear from Lauren and Andrew. So we're now at the end of May, and most listeners in the UK have already experienced a taste of the warm, sunny weather that's likely to come over the next few months. So although it's not anything out of the ordinary, we thought it would be useful to talk about heat stress in pigs and think about some practical measures that farmers can implement on their units and perhaps suggest some new ideas. If I come to you first, Lauren, could you tell us what we actually mean by heat stress?
Hi, yeah. So heat stress is caused when a pig's body temperature rises above certain limits and the pig can't take measures to cool itself. And so it becomes excessively hot and that can lead to a collapse and in really severe cases, potentially death. Pigs are a bit unique and generally more sensitive to heat than other livestock. There's a few reasons for that. So they have a higher level of subcutaneous fat, and that means they're generally a sort of warmer, better insulated animal. But also their lungs are relatively small in comparison to their overall size. So that can obviously, they can feel the impact of increased respiration and that kind of thing quite a lot more than other animals. And finally, they don't have an ability to sweat or sweat very well at all. So they physically have to move themselves to other areas in order to cool down or do something to cool themselves, whether that's wallowing or drinking cooler water or moving into a shady area.
What kind of impact does this actually have on pig performance?
So it can have quite a few impacts on pig performance and overall health. Firstly, just looking at feed intake, eating in itself generates heat. And so if an animal's already hot, they're less likely to eat as much as normal. And that can have impacts on their growth and their overall performance and welfare. But there are quite a lot of implications on breeding animals as well. So boar semen quality can be quite affected. Boars don't operate overly well or work very well when exposed to heat. And so if you try and push them to continue working when exposed to heat, you'll see quality really deteriorate. Sows have also been shown to have litter sizes. There's quite a lot of research that shows that litter sizes and litter weights may decrease by up to 25%. And also piglets that are born to a heat stressed animal seem to have higher temperatures overall throughout life. And so that means that they're more likely to suffer with heat stress. They may grow more slowly, be slightly sort of less efficient in terms of feed and use of protein and fat. And therefore, it takes longer to get those animals to the target weight. And that can be quite a costly situation for farmers, as well as potential welfare issues for the actual pigs.
Definitely. There's quite a lot there. If you start adding all of those different things up, it could have quite a significant impact on productivity and cost implications for a unit. I think you've touched on it a little bit already, but does heat stress affect indoor pigs as well as outdoor pigs?
Yeah, there's a massive impact both indoor and outdoor. And I know Andrew will touch on some of the sort of management options and ways to get around that. But there are definitely implications. And just because your pigs are indoors doesn't mean that heat stress isn't an issue. And actually, if there are issues with ventilation, particularly as temperatures start to increase on the outside, stocking densities, particularly in larger pigs, there's a real risk of them being exposed. Some of the signs that you might start to see those pigs are noticing sort of increased respiration, pigs panting and breathing quite heavily. And then going back to that reduced feed intake, and that's applicable both indoor and outdoor. And so it's something that all producers really need to be aware of. And there's steps they can sort of actively take now to try and combat those early on, really.
Okay, so are there any other symptoms that people should be looking out for in addition to those ones you've just mentioned on the indoor side?
Looking at stocking densities, if bigger pigs starting to sort of pant, being lethargic, trying to move away from the crowd and lying in dunging areas to cool down, they're quite key issues. And any signs really that pigs are really trying to get away from the crowd in order to cool down. They're sociable creatures. And so if they're actively trying to find areas away, moving into drafts and that kind of thing to cool down, then perhaps a sign that things aren't quite right and there are something needs addressing.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Lauren. If we catch up with Andrew now and we look at some of the measures we can do to combat heat stress, So, Andrew, let's start off by thinking about what producers can do now before we actually reach the heights of summer. I mean, I know it's actually been quite warm recently, but it's undoubtedly going to get even warmer. But are there things that producers can do now in preparation for even higher temperatures, both on the indoor and outdoor side?
Yeah, hello, everybody. Yes, if you start, you know, we'll start with the outdoor sector. You know, it's generally sometimes the odd hot days we start to have in April and May that often start to trigger any potential heat stress effects in animals because the animals aren't used to them hot days already. You know, generally while by the time the summer comes along, they've got used to it. But it's often the odd high days that happen in April and May that are often the trigger effects. And that's often the warning sign. You know, certainly the stock people and the unit managers need to be starting, making sure, you know, the wallers have been dug and cleaned out and ready to go. Shades, you know, people do still go to shades. Increasingly, we're seeing paint being used on arcs as well to reduce, it's been shown to reduce the degree in the temperature in the arcs by several degrees. And traditionally, insulation in the arcs was always thought maybe used for the winter months, but now it's increasingly more important, probably just for the summer months and the heat. And we've got one or two people even starting to look at insulation in dry sow arcs as well now. Not so much for the winter, but for the summer months, so there's a cooler place in a bigger shaded area as well. And then, you know, one of the other things that sometimes gets overlooked is the body condition of the score of the sows. You know, if you've got sows coming out of a winter and you've been feeding, you know, for the winter months, you're sometimes still on the old feeding regime. And what the last thing you want in the summer is a real fat sow or a real overweight animal. So, you know, reflecting and just keep monitoring the feeding regimes and keeping an eye on the body score conditions of all the sows. So you haven't got these big overweight, over-conditioned animals when they're coming into key periods, especially around farrowing as well. And sometimes what also happens also is units will maybe start to serve extra gilts from about now, you know, to cover any potential drop in any breeding production flow, because the gilts hopefully will generally hold their services a lot better than maybe old established sows on the units as well.
Okay, so there's quite a few things people can actually start to do now over the next couple of weeks. And it's an interesting point you make about the diets. People will just carry on as usual if they kind of aren't triggered to think about changing it. So it's definitely one people might want to consider thinking about. In terms of the walleye management for outdoor producers, are there some kind of tips or things you could recommend producers might want to implement to make sure that they're managed well over the coming weeks and months?
Yeah, I think one thing that seems to get forgotten about regards when it comes to wallow management is, does everyone understand on the unit what they're needed for and what's the importance of the wallows? Because often it's just giving us a job, you know, make sure all the wallows are full, and no one fully understands why we need to build the wallows in. And I think once you've got everyone understands, you know, the why, the how does it become a problem, but increasingly, what I see now is there's a lot of investment now regards to the equipment being used to deliver the water to the wallows if it's a manual bowser system. Because what's happened sometimes in the past is there's a little old bowser tank that's expected to do the whole of the unit, and it takes, you know, over an hour to fill, and, you know, and the job can last practically all day. You know, we're seeing a lot of investment now in automation hydraulic relief valves for filling the wallows, but also fast turnaround at the fill points for the wallows as well. So the job doesn't become a real tedious job to do. You know, if it's the operator can stay in his tractor seat and just move a few hydraulic levers to deliver the water from the comfort of his seat, you know, to fill the wallows up as he's driving around the unit. But what's just as important is when he goes back to refill up from the refill point, that it's a quick fill. You know, no more than 5 to 10 minutes at the most is a refill point. And then also what sometimes gets overlooked, if that refill point has a bearing effect on the pressure of the whole water system of the farm, you know, try and make it a separate outlet where the fill point comes from, so you aren't decreasing the pressure, what will be a high water demand time from the whole of the unit as well. We're getting away from the traditional let's get do it, let's explain the why and get the equipment and infrastructure in place. It's sometimes what I see on units is, you know, is it, the wallow management is expected to be done, but some of the equipment is maybe a bit tired or not fit for purpose. So it's just putting the onus on the owners a little bit more to making sure, and the owners that have done all this investment. It's a real improvement. So it's just flipping the argument round a little bit.
Yeah, you don't want to make it more difficult than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I think if people understand a bit more about why they're doing something, it just helps, doesn't it, a lot more with the actual application of it then, because it's not just you're doing it because you're told, you're doing it because you understand the, and then it affects the way you actually perform, doesn't it, rather than just I've been told to do this and I'm digging X by Y and filling it with blah blah blah.
And for the indoor side, I guess now would be a good time, if they haven't already done it, to start checking your ventilation and your fans are all working properly, that they're nice and clean. Is there anything else from the indoor side that might be a good thing to do at the moment?
Yeah, the indoor people, it sometimes gets overlooked, is the what I call it, an MOT of the building, the ventilation system. You know, everyone cleans the fans at pressure washing time, but do we look at the ducts and the cowlings, the ANC curtains, all the wires, accumulators, and the sensors? You know, are they all working? Are they all correctly calibrated? You know, even if a building that's been relatively down in a short space of time, between 2 to 3 or 5 years, you know, cables can become worn and stretched, and all the system has to be recalibrated, and flaps as well, inlet flaps as well. So, you know, it's just as important as well as when you're pressure washing a pen down for between batches, is just to keep an eye on all these key bits of equipment, especially when you're coming into the summer months as well.
Definitely. The last thing you want is to be in the hottest day of the year and you find your fans have failed or something. So, yeah, a bit of MOT and maintenance now, I'm sure, will pay dividends in the end. So let's look a little bit further ahead then. We're in the peak of summer. The temperatures are soaring. Are there any things that producers should focus on in particular to keep pigs cooler? What were the key things they could do from an indoor and outdoor perspective? And I guess this follows on from our preparation, but are there any other points you'd like to cover?
I think just keeping an eye on the equipment being used, you know, whether indoor or outdoor, whether it be the bowser or the ventilation system. Increasingly, the indoor will have an increasingly difficult job because the temperature they're trying to maintain in the building is a lot cooler than the air they're pulling in. So, you know, if they're trying to maintain a 16, 17 degree temperature inside the building, yet the air they're pulling in from the outside is 25 plus, you know, it's a struggle to get that temperature. And I think a good understanding of how ventilation systems work, you know, everyone's knee-jerk reaction is to drop all the doors and open all the windows open to try and get more airflow. But what you need to do is to create air movement, not air inlet. And I think once you understand the concept of that a little bit more, I think ventilation, you can make your ventilation system work better for you. You know, the knee-jerk reaction is to drop all the doors, open all the windows and everything. But sometimes the more you restrict them, you create a better airflow. So you're creating a cooler environment or a more comfortable environment.
And I guess that's where misters or foggers might come into play to make evaporative cooling more of an effective method of cooling the pigs.
Yes, yeah, definitely. You know, we're seeing an increasing amount of use of these being used now. Especially now when we are starting to see more prolonged periods of warmer weather. And you know, everyone hopefully will see the decrease, not hopefully see, but understand the implications of the reduced feed intake, not so much on the decreased feed, but also how it affects the production flow of the building. You know, the pigs slowing up in growth, you know, the system starts backing up a little bit because pigs aren't going off as their usual sale weight or their usual sale time, because of the decrease in growth rates.
And another thing that Lawrence touched on as well is the effect on semen quality and fertility. I know some of the tips we've talked about previously have been making a note on calendar when we've had a really hot period so that you can look back, or you put forward 6 to 8 weeks from when you had that heat wave, so you know when there's likely to be a drop in performance, and then you might want to serve extra or supplement with AI if you're outdoors perhaps.
Yes, certainly the AI, you know, we're all very good at putting our extra thermometers in the fridge to make sure the fridges are working at the right temperatures, but also it's just as importantly to use them in your climate control boxes for your semen storage. And also maybe splitting the amount of AI you take out on a service day, you know, maybe run it to 2 or 3 batches rather than taking the whole lot out in a morning sort of thing, especially if the boxes are struggling a little bit to keep a little bit cooler. And I know I used to build a second box, certainly, and it used to help in the winter as well. So there's like a semi-climate, a two boxes in a box that keeps it a little bit cooler as well. So yeah, just little things like that as well can help.
Okay. And then I wonder, is there anything that you've kind of picked up from around Europe or the rest of the world, other countries are implementing that we perhaps aren't doing so much in the UK yet?
Yeah, we're seeing some interesting stuff coming out of the EU pig project now, where there's a little bit more work on misters, but also there's some building design changes as well, where they're creating microclimates, especially for suckling sows in the farrowing houses, whether it be a cooling pad under the sow inbuilt into the floor, or maybe an air duct or an air tube that's directly above the head of the sow, which creates a microclimate. The sow, because the sow needs between 15 16 degrees as the maximum thermal neutral temperature, but the piglets need 20 22 plus or above more. So it's creating a semi two-in climates within one pen, you know, and it's using technology to help us that little bit more. But scrubbers and coolers as well is starting to help as well, sort of thing.
Is that kind of thing you could retrofit, or would it only work in a new building?
I don't know. I think there's a growing archive of information out there to start to look at it. And it's certainly something that we probably need to look at a bit more detail, and using building manufacturers, or not so much challenging, but asking building manufacturers in the UK, can it be something that's incorporated into new build, or can it be retrofitted? Certainly the likes of misters and drippers can be retrofitted. Cooling pads, I don't think it'd be on realms of impossibility to do that.
Okay. Well, we'll include a few links in the show notes today to the EU pig projects that you've mentioned there and some of our extra resources. But otherwise, thank you both for your time today. Hopefully we've given listeners some ideas of things they can do to help reduce or at least manage heat stress on their units. And if nothing else, hopefully it's been a timely reminder to get things like shades, wallows and fans in good order. As I said, you can find some useful links in the show notes, and there's also a questionnaire for you to let us know what you'd like to hear more of in our podcasts. But before we wrap up, Felicity Rusk is going to give a quick update on the pig market and consider how coronavirus might affect markets over the coming months.
With the coronavirus pandemic continuing to develop, the pork market is currently facing unprecedented circumstances. Chinese import demand will remain a pivotal factor in the global pork market. The USDA recently revised down its pork production forecast for China, as the nation is still struggling to recover from African swine fever. Their own battle with the coronavirus has reportedly disrupted herd rebuilding plans. As such, the Chinese protein deficit will likely be larger than initially expected, which should support import demand. The USDA expects Chinese import demand to be up in the region of 60% in 2020 compared to the previous year. However, while this is beneficial to pork markets here and in Europe, there still will be challenges. Production in both Brazil and the US has been expanding to fulfil Chinese demand. However, with the food service sector in both these nations all but closed, this results in an oversupply, particularly of certain cuts, that puts significant pressure on prices. This is only made worse by the closure of some important US pork processing facilities. On the 3rd of April, Chicago lean hog futures fell to their lowest point since October 2002. Given the nature of pork production, it will take some time to slow the production growth. All this means is that there will be increasing competition to supply pork to China, particularly as some logistical constraints like container availability remain problematic. With this in mind, prices achievable on the Chinese market may not be as high as previously expected. Despite also facing the loss of food service demand, pork prices across Europe have remained at an elevated level. Markets here have been somewhat sheltered away from the downturn in domestic demand, as they've been diverting product away from the domestic market towards China. Exports to China increased dramatically in 2019, even though production actually declined. The latest report from DIRA suggests that EU pig prices could even rise again in the second half of 2020, supported by the continued demand from the Chinese market, and remained elevated at Q1. Of course, these are particularly uncertain times, and there are many variable factors that could derail this relatively optimistic outlook for the pig sector. As we become more informed and the full effects of COVID-19 become evident, these expectations will likely change. This scenario assumes that key economies, including China, do not experience a second wave of the virus that prolongs economic shutdown. If that were to happen, the outlook would be more challenging. It also remains to be seen exactly how much competition from US and Brazilian pig meat could pull down prices. The potential for further ASF spread in Europe remains an ongoing threat as well. To keep up to date with the latest analysis on how coronavirus is impacting the market, please visit the pork section of the AHDB website or subscribe to our weekly newsletter. For more general information on how COVID-19 is affecting the agricultural sector, please visit our coronavirus hub.
That's all for today. Thank you for listening, and if you haven't already done so, why not subscribe so you don't miss future episodes? It would also be great if you could share the podcast with friends and colleagues. Until next time, bye for now.